Hey everybody, this is Chris, the usual host of the Day Zero Update podcast. Just to give you a bit of a heads up for why a show called Let's Weekend is showing up in this feed. Normally we host this show on the Internet Archive, which goes to the RSS feed and all that. And if you have not been paying attention to your internet news, the Internet Archive is down for the time being due to a massive hack with no real way to get around that at the moment. We are deciding to host this on the Day Zero Update feed here, which goes up on Spotify after they acquired whatever this was called before that. Anchor, I think it was. But yeah, if you have not checked out this show before, it is a new show, similar to what we do with Day Zero Update, but for non-gaming content. So we talk about some politics, entertainment news, sports news, on occasion, science news, whatever comes up that is interesting to us. So yeah, that is another show that we do. We do it the day before Day Zero, and then it gets uploaded around the same time because I'm the one that's editing that alongside Day Zero. So thank you all for dealing with this, and hopefully Internet Archive will be back soon so that we can get everybody back on track. But for now, feel free to try this out and see how you like it. If so, you know, check out the other episodes and hang tight until everything is back to normal. So thank you all. Have a good one, and stay tuned. The show will be starting here in just a moment.
Hello, America, and to all of our listeners around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining us, as always, is Chris Logie and Teresa Sammons. Say hi to the good people, folks.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so among some other things that we will be discussing this week, Bob Woodward, everybody, one of the great storied investigative journalists, recently released a new book about the Trump administration, and specifically some parts during the COVID panic. I mean, pandemic. I mean, there was also a panic, but it was the pandemic. And revealed some stuff that is, frankly, pretty unsavory. Like, I mean, not surprising, but we expected it would. It's still gross. But we also have some other stuff. We have the aftermath of Hurricane Milton, which, fortunately, basically because of its, you know, its direction, you know, we up here didn't have to worry about it. Thank goodness. I didn't want to have to go through that experience again. But it still ended up creating some serious chaos in Florida, and we'll be talking about that. There's also the upcoming Supreme Court term. And, of course, we've also got all the stuff we'll be talking about in the entertainment part, including a certain animated show finally being put out of its misery, and we also got some trailers as well. So, yeah, we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off, as is always tradition. We talk a little bit about all the things that we have been doing up to this point this week, and as also tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Well, enjoying the nice weather, as it's been much more chill lately. High is usually in the 60s, which I think is about right where it should be.
Yeah, happy medium, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been nice to see, though we hit 71 or 2 yesterday. I got some rain today that's going to cool it back down, so that's been nice. But yeah, I haven't been watching too much other than just old bullshit. The DLC for Power Wash Simulator came out this week, which features the world of Shrek. And so I decided to better understand where a lot of these set pieces are going to be at. I watched the first three Shrek movies. The first one still holds up really well.
Oh, yeah. Well, because that was when they were like, yeah, we're not trying to make sequel bait with this one.
Yeah. It's really well done. It's plenty of Smash Mouth in it, so I feel like the getting away of from the Smash Mouth kind of makes the sequels worse.
Yeah.
In terms of song choices. But yeah, it holds up really well. They have the castle Duloc in that is the first one. Set after Wreck and Donkey are set out to go to the tower to get the Princess Fiona. I guess the story is that the knights were super pissed, so they just created a huge mess.
Yeah.
In the part of the castle that you get to hang out in.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to mess with the information board, which has a song in the movie. It doesn't do any of that here.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get to open it up and see a bunch of the little puppets in there and all that. So that's fun. The second job goes into the second movie. At the very beginning, they're on their honeymoon and all that. So they go to this the Hansel and Gretel house.
Yep.
That's the second one. I have not done that one yet, but that's a nice place to go. But yeah, so that's as much as I've played of it. But the second movie is fine. It's pretty good and all that, but it's like just Shrek and Fiona going back to Fiona's home castle or whatever, meeting their parents, and at least her father, the king, not being happy that they're ogres.
Mm-hmm.
And all the shit that goes with that. Decent enough movie. The third one, definitely the worst of the three, where Shrek and Fiona are still at the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Shrek's in line to be the next king.
Mm-hmm.
As the king is about to die suddenly, and he does not want to be king, so he finds out that there's a nephew, and so goes to find him, and he's a big loser at the medieval high school that they're at, and goes and tries to get him into the job, and all that. And in the process, Shrek finds out that Fiona's pregnant, about to be a father, and there's all that playing into it. And so, yeah, it's all right. The interesting part is that the Prince Charming, who gets screwed out of being the king, he was sent off to be the one to rescue Fiona, but Shrek gets there first, obviously. And this one, he rallies all the villains to take over the far, far away castle, so he can become king and give them happily ever afters, whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's an all right premise, but it plays out like, it's okay. I've not seen the fourth one, though I know they're working on a fifth movie. But yeah, Peacock only had the first three, I think, from what I saw. But the nice thing is that they put it in their kids section, so you don't get ads throughout the whole thing. You get it at the beginning, and there are no political ads in it, so I did not have to see a bunch of hysterical transphobic shit based around our current election here with the Sherrod Brown running for re-election in the Senate, U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
And the car salesman Bernie Moreno running on the GOP side. I've gotten tons of flyers in the mail, so I'm happy for that to be over soon. But yeah, that's the Shrek stuff. Let's see. Also been watching Prison Break Season 3. I've gotten to Season 3 where they end up in the super prison Sona, which is a wild way for that to go. But been watching a good half of the season. This is the short season. It's like 12 or 13 episodes, something like that, compared to the rest. I forget if this was during the writer's strike or whatever, but It's good. It's not as good as the first two seasons, but pretty interesting stuff going on is Michael Scofield's trying to break out to this prison and break out at least one important person to the company, helping them out in the process. This is supposed to be the super tough prison where it's so bad they had a riot the previous year, so that the guards couldn't deal with, so they basically built a perimeter around the prison. So they don't have to police anything going on inside of it. So that's a weird whole thing, but yeah. Solid season, but that's been pretty much it for what I've been watching. And for games, I've been playing too much. I did jump back into Halls of Torment, the Vampire Survivors clone that is styled in the sort of style that like the Diablo 1 and 2 are. Which is a pretty neat way that they've done this game. It's hit 1.0 a few weeks ago, so I've been jumping back into it and playing it and just getting tons of achievements. There's like 500 achievements in it. Some of the nice things they've done is they've added the ability to track challenges. So if you are going in where it's like, oh, you got to deal X amount of damage with this ability, you can track it so that you know when you start getting abilities, like, oh, I need this one, pick that, be able to track the amount of damage you're doing, or whatever the challenge needs. Some of them are as basic as, like, you know, stand in place for 180 seconds, and so you're building out your abilities to benefit your ability to stay in one place and not have to take as much damage, that kind of stuff. It also has loot, but not necessarily in the way that you would think. You have to, if you find loot in a stage, you have to take it to like it's the bottom of a well that you put it in a bucket, send it back up, and then you can buy it from the merchant that pulls it up. But you can only do like one item per run, so it doesn't let you do too much. But I have ones that let me spawn enemies as companions to do damage for me, to help me out with taking out enemies, that kind of stuff. So got some nice things that put a twist on the Vampire Survivors formula. So, but yeah, that's been what I've been enjoying playing some more. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been watching some stuff too. A good bit of stuff, but kind of some of the standouts. We finished the second season of Rings of Power. That's an Amazon one. You know, they really had a hard time finding their footing, I think, in the first season, but I still liked it. And then the second season, oh, dudes, they wrapped that up real well. I'm quite excited for the third season. And also kind of wondering if it will just be a three-season thing, because there's only so much material prior. Well, I mean, I guess there's probably a lot. Tolkien was prolific. But if you have Amazon, or if you have a family member, friend who has Amazon, get their password and watch that, or find it another way. It's worth getting through season one. I also rewatched Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
It's kind
of, right, like, you guys remember how we were about like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a 17-year-old sit here next to me and watch these things, it's like, I'm sorry for how we were, but we got better.
It's like, I'm sorry. Sorry. Right. I'm so sorry.
Some of us dipped into the dark side of the Adam Sandler family of movies.
Yeah.
It's something. Seinfeld, Drew Carey show, those kind of things. Same thing. I'm just like, oh my God. We were a product of our time. And I don't really know how it came about that I'm now that old to be saying that. But for something not quite so old, we stopped our Dragon Ball fancy super. No, we're in super actually. And picked up a movie we needed to get through before we went further in the series. And we watched Resurrection F. That's where they brought back Frieza. It was actually pretty good. I was really worried about the pacing of the movie because, you know, we only had like 30 minutes left. And I didn't think things were going along as quickly as they could have. And yeah, that wrapped up fast. compared to how Dragon Ball can kind of go. But that's really it for stuff that I've been watching. As for playing, Chris, you mentioned Vampire Survivor. I was playing a crap ton of that. You know, not the the clone, but I was working on some of the achievements. Because I was waiting for the new DLC for Kingdom Two Crowns to drop, and that came out on the 10th, and it's called Heroes of Olympus. And like it so far, have no idea what we're doing, because, you know, we're not going to watch any kind of tutorials or whatnot. And we're still in our first game. We're still trying to figure it out. Things have been kind of crazy. I really wish that I had had more time to play this week, but it was one of those weeks. And then, other than that, I got my COVID booster. Today was the last beautiful day, I think, we had. So, we all walked over to the nearest Walgreens, and, all three of us got it. So, it could be, right, it could be an interesting tomorrow. but yeah, we got that done, and, there's something that I did that,
Go ahead.
Yeah. I bought the Nintendo alarm sins, clock.
My child. You did?
No, I didn't. I did. I feel like I should be giving up some sort of card after doing that. But hear me out. I thought it would be helpful for Jacob, who is in the first year of college and living on campus, and the whole sleep thing is a bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, now he does not agree with that being used by him or anybody else. So we'll see how that goes along with time. But yeah, I did that. I don't know what I was.
Yeah.
I figure how this is going to end up is that by, let's say, Easter, they're all going to be clearanced at like $29.99 because nobody's going to buy this crap except for me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's more or less what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So, nobody tell Pat because he'll, oh my God, he'll have words for me, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Especially on behalf of Jacob, who is just gobsmacked that I did that and thought that he would use it. So that's about it for me. Brandon, what have you been up to?
Well, as for me, I finished Renatus and I've got my review done. It's just ready for editing. Should be up on the site in the next couple days. But to more or less make a long story short, that game, for all of its ambition, turned out to be very mediocre. Because it had like a real pedigree going behind it. It had the writer for Final Fantasy VII on it. It had the composer for Kingdom Hearts on it. It had like a tie-in with Neo, The World Ends With You. It had a lot going into it, but yeah, that game is just like, it's so obvious that they had a lot of ambition, and then somewhere along the line, it's like they completely ran out of either time or money, and they had to rush through to get this thing finished. And it definitely shows. The graphics are very lackluster. The character models don't emote, like, at all. They barely even blink. When the review comes out, you'll all know. I go into detail about all of it. But to sort of get that mediocre taste out of my mouth, I played the demo and finished it, and, you know, now I've got the game itself. I'm sort of kind of into it now. Metaphor Refantasio, the newest RPG from Atlas, made by the people behind the Persona games, even though it's not related to Persona at all, on the surface at least. And yeah, it's just, it's really damn good. I've talked already about how, you know, I love like the game's world building, how it tries to, you know, go against various old stereotype, you know, old fantasy tropes and stuff. And overall, it's also just like really fun to play. But if you've played Persona, you have a pretty good idea of how this goes. Everything's kind of on a schedule. There's a lot of interactions you have to do to make alliances and build relationships and stuff. There's, you know, going out and having to, you know, complete various quests and everything. The difference this time around, though, is unlike in like the Persona games where, you know, you do something, you do like an activity, it might take up the entire afternoon, and then you have to figure out what you're going to do for the evening or something like that. There's actually an added layer to that this time around, because unlike in the Persona games where you're basically stuck in and around a single area, because you're going all over this game's world and you're traveling, you have to compensate for the amount of time it's going to take to get from one destination to another. And that is also further complicated by what the weather is looking like at any given time, because if there's like a lot of rain or something, it may add an extra day to your schedule. And just like in the Persona games, you know, there's always that one point on the calendar where it's like, if you're going to do something, you got to do it before this point or else it's game over. And that's basically still the same thing here, but you have to plan ahead for the amount of time it's going to take you to get to a certain location. And then, of course, there's just the boss battles. Holy shit, the boss battles. The bosses in this game are amazing. They are heavily inspired by the paintings of Hieronymus Bosch, and holy shit, does it show. And some of them are like crazy elaborate. The very first major boss that you go up against, like the first major... I say first major. There's actually one you do it beforehand that's kind of like... part of like the demo of the boss, like the demo's boss that you go up against, the prologue. This one it's freaking insane. It's based on a figure called the Tree Man from Hieronymus Bosch's painting The Garden of Earthly Delights, which is famous because it's essentially this thing that's like, it's got like two tree hollow tree trunks for legs. It has like a hollow torso that has like a table and figures inside of it. And the head of it, which in the original painting, a lot of believe is supposed to be like a profile of Hieronymus Bosch himself, sort of looking out at you with like a plate on its head with like these weird sort of demonic figures dancing around this organ thing that looks kind of like a bagpipe. But because it's Atlas, they sort of went the extra mile by peeling off part of the figure's face so it's kind of hanging down. And every time you manage to break open its torso, he can then unleash an attack where like this whole host of like little goblins wearing tin hats rush at you with like their little spears. It's insane. But it's so much fun and it's so good. But yeah, so like that's where, more or less since the game came out Friday, that's been like pretty much what I've been playing. But some other stuff I've been doing. I have been reading, as usual. I have been reading this little book. I've been meaning to read it for years. And I even got a copy of it years ago that I ended up selling away because I had other things I was dealing with at the time. It's called The Name of the Rose. It's a book. It was written by Umberto Eco, which if that name sounds familiar, he's the guy behind the fascism essay that you'll sometimes see on the internet where it talks about like the 14 characteristics of what fascism looks like. Yeah, he's that guy. And essentially what this book is it's at its heart, it's a murder mystery. But it's a murder mystery that takes place in a Italian monastery in the 14th century. It's very layered. Basically, it's about this one guy. He's a friar. He's a Franciscan friar. His name's William of Baskerville. And he has a assistant coming with him named Adso, who are going to a Benedictine abbey in northern Italy. And right off the bat, like, these two have sort of like a Sherlock and Watson type of deal going. And basically what happens is they get to this monastery because they're taking part in a theological disputation. Because there's this dispute that's going on between the Pope at the time, which was Pope John the 22nd, and the Franciscan friars over the question of apostolic poverty. And when they get there, they find out that one of the brothers in the monastery died a suspicious death. And so the abbot of the monastery, who was a former inquisitor, asks William to investigate the incident because William was himself an inquisitor. And there it's a lot. It's very interesting because it goes a lot into detail of like what life in like an old monastery was, because you remember you're basically got all of these various groups of people, all of them of men, and all of them come from like all walks of life. Some of them were from very poor parts. Some of them were academics. Some of them were, you know, aristocrats. Some of them were the sort of children, the sort of that were, you know, sort of sent away by aristocratic families, either because, you know, they might have been an issue for like a line of succession, or they were crippled or something like that. One of the guys that he comes in contact with is a guy named Jorge of Burgos, who is like the oldest, one of the oldest monks in the abbey, over the nature or the permissibility of laughter, which Jorge regards as a threat to the established order. This, I have been told that this apparently comes into play later in the book, but basically what happens is, as he's as William is sort of investigating all of the investigating this murder, more and more people start dying in these like weird, bizarre ways. So like one of them is a guy named named Venetius. He ends up being found dead in a vat of pig's blood. And there's like signs that he might have been poisoned. They also discover that there's a hidden room inside the monastery's library. But they are, you know, they're trying to find it. And eventually what happens is all these weird deaths start piling on, and they start thinking that this is supposed to be like a sign of the end times. And so they start going to like this weird, it's just this sort of like sort of zealous sort of, you know, flagellation and all this stuff. It's really, it's a fascinating book, but it's loaded with so many layers, and it can definitely be overwhelming for some people who first start it. There's a reason this book became not only a bestseller, but also like a cult classic, because Umberto Eco was a scholar by trade, and he tended to load his books with all of these very obscure references. But yeah, it's, despite how like difficult it is, the book is surprisingly very, very engaging. Yeah, it's a great book, and I do recommend it for someone who wants like a murder mystery that also sort of goes into like some more, I guess, obscure historical ideas. But other than that, I've been, you know, music as usual. I've been listening to a lot of bluegrass lately because I do like bluegrass. I've been listening to Poor Man's Poison a lot, which is a sort of a folk bluegrass quartet that is very modern in their sensibilities, but still very traditional in their instrumentation. And it's good stuff. And other than that, just we're still going through, my grandma's estate and stuff, going through all of her old stuff and going through her possessions, trying to catalog it and where we're gonna do, what are we gonna do with it? We're gonna sell this, we're gonna keep this, all that stuff. It's grueling work, but it's gotta be done. And it's gonna take a while too. Yeah, that's basically everything I've done. So do you guys have anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
No? All right. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And just a quick question to you two. We've all seen The Exorcist before, right?
Nope.
You've never seen The Exorcist?
No.
You serious? You've never seen The Exorcist before?
I don't like horror movies.
That's fair enough. Well, The Exorcist was one of those movies that was really super duper successful back in the day. And when that movie came out, it made a star of a bunch of people, but specifically it made a star out of its the young girl who gets possessed, a lady by the name of Linda Blair. And Linda Blair had a very has had a very shall we say unusual career after that. One of the movies she starred in that I actually like, but a lot of people find kind of weak, is a movie called Repossessed. It was basically a parody movie of The Exorcist that has Leslie Nielsen in it. And the it was directed, written and directed by this guy named Bob Logan. And through this connection, I found another project that Bob Logan wrote and directed that also stars Linda Blair. It's this video that was put out in 1989 that is famous for sort of its mysterious reputation. It's called How to Get Revenge. Well, actually, it's How to Get ... Revenge. Like I said, it's a VHS. It was released back in 1989. Stars Linda Blair as its host. And that's about all anybody really knows about this movie. None of the other people in the movie have ever given their names. Nobody knows who these people are. The only other person that's actually named on the IMDb page for this is Gregory Itzen, who played like an uncredited officer, like police officer role in it. And you can like, I'm pretty sure you can go to like YouTube or some other places where you can find video like Daily Motion or something where you can find a place to watch this movie or watch reviews of it. Like I know it showed up on Best of the Worst once or twice. And the thing is, this is a it, the way that it's sold is this is a comedic, humorous educational movie to show how you can get back at somebody that has wronged you in some way. And some of it comes off as really petty, and then some of what they end up recommending is just downright illegal in like really awful, serious ways. But essentially, the way this works is Linda is sort of the host, and she's talking about like, we want to, this is something where if you want to get back and play a joke on somebody, we're not talking about any kind of harm or personal injury or anything. This is all for fun. Which is the idea. And then you go further in and you realize, oh my God, this is some shit that could actually get people arrested. So, like, first example, really good example. One of the individuals that she talks to in this movie is a guy claiming to be a private investigator. And next to this guy is sitting this weird, like, dorky looking dude with like glasses and a mullet, and a mustache and like a porno stash. And he's saying, like, and he's talking about like, okay, so what did they do? He's like, okay, well, I was eating at a Chinese restaurant and then I got picked on by this couple and, it made me feel really small. And so, what I did is I went to a toy store and I bought a toy gun, a realistic toy gun. I put it inside this guy's truck. Then I went to a public phone, called the police and said that I had heard the APB about there being a bank robber out and about, and I reported this guy's truck. Now, obviously, if you were to do that for real, you would basically be in serious trouble with the law. But it doesn't stop there. There's another one where they talk to another guy who's a private investigator, And among his things, he talks about things like, hey, say one of your neighbors gets on you. Well, if your neighbor is of a foreign persuasion, you can call the immigration services at and get them to make them have to do like tons of hours of really awful paperwork to prove that they're a citizen. I'm like, oh my God, that is horrible. There's also about like trying to, you know, get them on the mailing list of like various pornographic or, you know, gay magazine stuff. It's like, this is insane. There's another one with a guy who talks about how you can mess with a guy's, with a person's car. So like things like, putting sugar in the engine or, you know, putting sawdust into the carburetor or, loading up the tailpipe with like a banana or paper mache, anything that'll expand. Basically something that will, or there's even one part where he's like, you can also play a little truck by, you know, going underneath and doing just a little snip on their brake lines. And it's like, are you kidding me? And yeah, this movie, when it came out, just about nobody really paid any attention to it. It's sort of one of those movies that just gained a reputation for being both mysterious, weird, and it's like, who was this for?
This was 89?
Yeah, this was 1989.
Wasn't that before like Bam Margera and all those?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This is, for the record, Linda Blair made a lot, you know, attached herself to a lot of questionable projects in the 80s. This is probably the most questionable of all of them. So, yeah, that is How to Get Revenge. Probably the one project Linda Blair wishes she could just remain dead and buried. But, yeah, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay, so, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our asshole of the week, well, it has to do with a new book come out by storied investigative journalist Bob Woodward. His new book, which discusses the Trump administration and particularly parts of the Trump administration that were happening during, you know, the COVID pandemic. And it reveals that, amongst other things, he ended up sending a bunch of the really good COVID-19 tests to Putin while the U.S. was experiencing an extreme shortage.
Yeah. There's this upcoming book called War that kind of looks at Trump's record on the international stage as well as Biden's.
Yeah.
And this seems to be one of the major stories that people have been talking about. And mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. Putin telling Trump here, I don't want you to tell anybody because people get mad at you, not me. They don't care about me. Trump responded, I don't care. Fine. Mm. So I like the notion of Putin being where they only give a shit about you doing this if it gets out, not me. Mm-hmm. So do whatever you can. But yeah. So Kamala Harris talked about this on Howard Stern as it just come out around then. She said Woodward's reporting was an example why Trump cannot be trusted as commander in chief because he said he is easily manipulated by authoritarians he hopes to befriend.
Mm-hmm.
She said here he admires strong men and he gets played by them because he thinks that they're his friends and they are manipulating him full time and manipulating him by flattery and with favor.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, people were dying by the hundreds. Everybody was scrambling to get these kits. And this guy, who was president of the United States, is sending them to Russia to a murderous dictator for his personal use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously the Trump campaign dismissed the book as made-up stories written by a deranged man, according to a statement by its communications director, Stephen Chung. So, saying President Trump gave him absolutely no access for this trash book. It either belongs in the bargain bin of the fiction section of a discount bookstore or used as toilet tissue.
Mm.
It's like, who the hell uses toilet tissue?
People who are out of touch.
That's like old man talk for toilet paper.
Yeah. Like, all right. But yeah, that's not great news.
Yeah.
We have people dying and needing of these tests, and he's sitting there sending it out to Russia for Putin's use. So,
mm-hmm.
In case you need more information about why Trump is a dumb piece of shit, but there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, so there's that. But fortunately, it's not all terrible news, because we do have Heroes of the Week to discuss. First and foremost, 13 states and the District of Columbia are collectively suing TikTok, alleging it harms kids and is designed for addiction, which it is.
Yeah.
Welcome to social media in the 21st century.
Yeah, something that should have been challenged much sooner, but
mm-hmm.
here we are. Just in case you're wondering about, like, other social media, Facebook, there's a big lawsuit with, I think, like 40-some states joining it that was announced either last year or earlier this year. But, yeah, last year, a coalition of states filed a similar lawsuit against Instagram and Facebook owner Meta, accusing the tech giant of failing to keep children safe on the popular apps, which is still pending, obviously. But, yeah, this one, with 13 states led by California and New York, suing TikTok for allegedly duping the public about the safety of the popular video app, and it was deliberately designed to keep young people hooked on the service. The lawsuits filed separately on Tuesday in 13 states in the District of Columbia argue TikTok has violated consumer protection laws and contributed to a teen mental health crisis, which I can definitely see. A bipartisan group of attorneys general is seeking to force TikTok to change product features that they argue are manipulative, harm teens. The suits are also asking courts to impose financial penalties on the company. So yeah, that's a big deal. TikTok definitely is designed in a way of just keep going from video to video to video to video. In a way that everybody else is emulating now.
Yeah.
If you're looking at like your Twitter app and on videos, they have their whole section of just here's the videos. Don't even have to look at tweets. Just watch the videos and go right to the next one.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is that because they have to keep that model going, they're relying more and more on recycling AI garbage. So, like, TikTok in particular is flooded with that shit.
Yeah. There's a weird bit where a lot of it was, like, QVC-style sponsored shows of selling shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the weirdest thing I'd ever heard is, like, why the hell is that coming?
Yeah.
But... yeah, luckily we're getting getting some of these social media sites getting challenged, though.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And we got this other news from the Biden administration. They are setting a new 10-year deadline for U.S. cities to replace lead pipes and water systems nationwide, which is good because it's a long time coming.
Yeah. As he even says here... we're finally addressing an issue that should have been addressed a long time ago in this country. You're showing up as a partner to get it done. Because, this is a thing we've known about for probably 50 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
That the lead pipes are bad for children, anybody really.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of funding is never as much as needed to fully replace them all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of been a thing that gets chipped away at every year. Little by little, and still not enough, as you clearly get to the Flint, Michigan water crisis that's 10 years ago. So, he set a 10-year deadline for cities across the nation to replace their lead pipes, finalizing an aggressive approach aimed at ensuring that drinking water is safe for all Americans. This is the final EPA rule during a visit to the swing state of Wisconsin in the final month of a tight presidential campaign. The announcement highlights an issue, safe drinking water, that Kamala Harris has prioritized as vice president and during her presidential campaign. New rule supplants a looser standard set by former President Donald Trump's administration and did not include a universal requirement to replace lead pipes. Dear folks, what is the government for if it cannot protect the public health? Talking to a bunch of union members at a cavernous Department of Public Works warehouse in Milwaukee. Which that city has the fifth highest number of lead pipes in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Which is wild to know, like, how many lead pipes they have.
Mm-hmm.
But not have the funding to do anything about it. There's more than 9 million lead pipes remaining in use in this country. So, that's a lot. That's something we should be getting fixed as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's another one of those like major public works thing that could put a lot of people, get a lot of good jobs for people. And it's also like one of those jobs that'll take a while because there's a lot, you know, removing lead from drains takes a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. But yeah, so we got that. And with that, it's now time to move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our top story for the night is the aftermath of Hurricane Milton. Like I said, because of its trajectory, we up here didn't have to worry about it. But for the people of Florida, it did a lot of damage. Originally, when it started, a lot of people were not expecting much for it. Like, you know, after Helene came through, it was like, yeah, this one's it could be bad, but we don't think it's going to be as bad as Helene was. But then as it got closer and closer to Florida, it ended up intensifying into a Category 5.
Yeah. It was just kind of hanging out in the Gulf there, and intensified to a Category 5 faster mm-hmm. than any other tropical depression mm-hmm. We've ever seen, in a way that's really put it on people's doorsteps there. Is like, oh shit, we really need to pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it did not stay at that once it hit land, but it definitely, I think, helped save lives as people took it seriously from the start versus being like, it's not going to be anything to worry about, just letting their guard down.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily, we didn't have as much to worry about eventually, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so when it finally made landfall, it was a full-on Category 3, and then it did not, you know, downgrade to a Category 2 until 2 hours later. So, yeah that's very extreme.
Yeah, Category 3 is still a lot. Category 3 is the maximum sustained winds of 120 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And a 2 is still at 105 miles an hour. Still a lot of power in those storms. But yeah, and it kind of hit lower, like south of Tampa Bay, just enough that it kind of minimized a lot of the potential damage mm-hmm. there. But there's still plenty of it and plenty of flooding and all that. The baseball stadium that the Tampa Bay Rays play in, Tropicana Field, had its dome roof kind of tore up.
Mm.
It's all kind of a material that's, if you saw pictures of that later, all those little panels of materials were just torn up.
Mm-hmm.
They were using that as a base of operations for rescue workers and such. So that obviously presented a lot of potential danger there. So, but luckily, that wasn't a huge deal, at least for all that long. It was like about a day's worth of real impact before being able to survey the damage mm-hmm. and see what work needed to be done to get people back into their homes and places and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as Milton, you know, went over Florida, it ended up causing about 126 tornado warnings, which, you know, is a lot. And as far as like actual tornadoes, there was about 38 counted that ended up appearing.
Yeah, 126 is, I believe, the second most ever for a state in the same day. Which was the number one was Alabama a handful of years ago, where they had a ton of tornadoes hit them.
Yep.
That was like 130 or so.
Yep.
So this was a lot. Obviously, Twitter was shit for finding out about this stuff because people put up a lot of AI-generated videos of hurricane or tornadoes and such, or old videos. That kind of got in the way of people getting information. But yeah, at least 38 have been reported. I assume they're still going to be doing more work and see how many more there might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's stuff that takes extra time, because sometimes they just happen in the middle of nowhere and they just send people out to survey the damage and see, like, was this a tornado or what? But
yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. So, yeah, the number of the people that died were just from those tornadoes, not even the hurricane itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and the number of tornadoes itself is also unusual because, excuse me. When it comes to hurricanes, hurricanes in general are prone to having tornadoes happen, usually on like the east side of the storm. But most of the time, they're very weak, and a lot of them don't even touch down. So the fact that you had all of these touching down is highly unusual.
Yeah. It probably helps that Florida is kind of more of a flat state.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, outside the fact that it's, you know, basically surrounded by water on three sides. Yeah, it's very flat. So, yeah. But as far as, like, the death toll overall comes, the death toll is currently at around 17 people. And that's both from the hurricane and the tornadoes that came before them, before it.
Yeah. Yeah, from all the storms of Hurricane Milton, so luckily it's not as bad as Helene.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that was because it hit a lot of people in remote places that weren't necessarily in great places to be able to evacuate, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, I assume if you're living in Florida, you probably have a pretty good idea for what your plan is.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then you fucked up. You're in the worst possible state for that, any of those things. So,
yep.
But yeah, luckily the loss of life was not as bad as it could have been, so that is mm-hmm. at least some silver lining there.
Yep. So there was that. So yeah, overall, Milton was pretty destructive. I'm not sure it necessarily was as destructive as Helene was, but then Helene had a very wide berth, whereas this one was largely just affected one state, but...
Yeah, basically went from western Florida to eastern Florida, then the Atlantic, and was done.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty nasty. And getting hit by, like, two really powerful hurricanes within the span of, like, 10 days... Probably, definitely something we should probably be paying attention to.
Yeah, this is one of those rare years where Florida's been hit by three hurricanes in the
yep.
in a year, so
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, so moving on from there, we're moving on to another major story, which is the Supreme Court. Its next term is coming up. And we got a bunch of major cases coming around concerning transgender rights, guns, and pornography. Probably the big bombshell one involves the transgender issue. It's yeah. about the forbidding the use of hormonal treatments for minors.
Yeah, this one is, let's see, transgender mentions. The transgender case is a test of laws in 24 states that ban the use of puberty blockers and other hormone treatments for minors.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously the blockbuster case of the term. It's a case of enormous significance and presents fundamental questions about the scope of state power to regulate medical care for minors and the rights of parents to make medical decisions for your children.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously that's the big one, but it's not the only one. There's also some gun-related stuff as well.
Yeah, let's see. That involves the so-called ghost guns that are made from build-it-yourself gun kits bought mm-hmm. online. Unlike guns bought from a licensed dealer, these guns are untraceable. They have no serial numbers, can be purchased anonymously and without any background checks. In 2022, is the number of these guns found at crime scenes mushroomed into tens of thousands, and law enforcement became alarmed. The ATF classified the kits as firearms, subject to same laws that apply to licensed gun dealers. The Biden administration argues that the regulation tracks the 1968 Gun Control Act, which defines a firearm as any weapon that is, quote, designed to... or may readily be converted into a functional firearm. The kit sellers counter that a bunch of parts are not a firearm. that a bunch of parts are not a firearm.
Yeah.
And there's a second gun case that tests whether the Mexican government can sue U.S. gun manufacturers for allegedly aiding and abetting illegal gun sales to traffickers for Mexican cartels.
Yeah.
So yeah, because Mexico has extremely strict gun laws that make it almost impossible for people to obtain guns legally.
Yep.
So yeah, if you want to see the gun culture of the U.S. Helps out is Mexican cartels.
Yeah.
All those guns being readily available, they get stolen or just bought legally by people related to the cartels.
Yep.
And they ship them out to Mexico so they can do all the shit they do down there.
Mm-hmm. Which sometimes involves the killing of American citizens. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really think we should pay attention to that one. And then, last but not least, of course, is the porn one. So basically what happened is Texas passed a law limiting access to sexually explicit material on the internet for kids under 18, which by itself, not a problem. The problem is that the law requires submission of various age verification measures, such as government-issued ID card, in order to get access to these, which then that's when it starts to get incredibly problematic, because that essentially means they create a database of people who use these sites.
That, and people are giving up their PII in order to verify their age. So, yeah. You know, you don't want to put your driver's license in there because people can do, you know, all sorts of things, opening accounts mm-hmm. in your name and whatnot. But you also don't want to do, like, your passport or whatever, because people can apply for benefits under your name. I mean, as soon as you put it on there, you have to assume it's going to be harvested somehow.
Yeah.
So none of this is good, and VPNs are going to be the only savior for people. This is happened to my brother in Kentucky. They put something in there where they have to age mm-hmm. verify. And there is no way in hell he's doing that.
Nope.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is like a rare topic that concerns both liberal conservative groups.
Yeah.
Because it affects the speech of adults.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's a bunch of other cases that are going. But what's also interesting are the cases they actually declined to intervene in.
Yeah. Particularly one of them is the Texas case. The high court let stand a Texas decision by the ultra-conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which mm-hmm. ruled that hospitals in Texas cannot be required to perform emergency abortions on women if doing so would violate Texas law. Mm. The Texas abortion law is one of the strictest in the country. Doctors have said it bans abortions that are needed to prevent sepsis, organ failure, and other serious threats to women's health.
Mm-hmm.
Importantly, there were no noted Supreme Court dissents on Monday, suggesting that the court expects it will have to resolve a conflict on this issue between a similar law in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Which protects the life, but not the health of the mother. And in June, the court, which had heard arguments in the Idaho case, decided not to decide the case for now, sending it back for a full hearing by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which had temporarily blocked enforcement of the law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big ones. There's one here. The justice left in place a Michigan State constitutional amendment that barred the use of public funds for private schools.
Mm.
A group of parents who wanted to get public assistance for their children's private school tuition challenged the constitutionality of the state law.
Mm.
They contended although the law technically banned public money for all private schools, the burden fell primarily on parochial schools, which I assume is the religious schools, but yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
There you go for that. We're left in place a workaround for Uber and Lyft drivers in California who are bound by agreements they signed committing them resolving labor disputes by arbitration under federal law.
Mm.
In other words, they can't go to court with their claims.
Yeah.
But the California State Attorney General and various city attorneys, the state sued the drive share companies on behalf of the drivers for monetary damages.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. In the only election case that was pending on the docket, the justice left in place a decision by the federal appeals court, dismissing a case brought by poll watchers in Michigan during the 2020 election. Poll watchers had signed affidavits alleging suspicious activity in the voting machines. Mm. Many voting systems accused them of defamation and got a cease and desist order barring them from continuing their campaign. So the poll watchers sued and their case was dismissed. So this left the dismissal in place. In another important case, this one involving a judge's refusal to step aside in a Guantanamo case, court again refused to intervene. The case arose in the case of Ali Hamda Ahmad Suleiman al-Balhu, one of the first prisoners taken to Guantanamo in 2002.
Yeah.
One of the lawyers who was on the prosecution team against al-Balhu was George Katsas. Years later, he became a federal judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia and was assigned to hear Balhu's appeal. So his lawyers moved to disqualify Katsas based on his involvement in the original litigation. Katsas refused to recuse himself. The government contends that the issue that Katsas was involved in as a lawyer in Balhu's case was not the one that was on appeal to the Supreme Court, and Katsas therefore did not have to recuse. And so they left that participation undisturbed. And the final one involves everybody's favorite dumbass billionaire, Elon Musk. The court rejected his attempt to avoid compliance with a warrant for private Twitter communication sent and received by Donald Trump right before and after the 2020 election. The warrant was issued by special counsel Jack Smith for communications between October 2020 and January 2021. Barred Twitter, now called X, from informing Trump of the warrant's existence. Musk contended that the warrant and the conditions of the warrant prevented Trump from asserting executive privilege that gagged Twitter's First Amendment rights in a highly public investigation, but the justice left the warrant undisturbed nonetheless. So there you go.
Yeah. So, going to be an interesting one, that's for sure. All I got to say is vote, people. Remember to vote. But anyway. So yeah, anyway, moving on from there, we got this story. The FBI arrested an Afghani man who they say was plotting an Election Day terrorist attack.
Yeah. Can you guess which U.S. city he's from?
I'm going to take a wild guess and say New York.
No, Oklahoma City.
Oh no!
Wow, that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, this man's 27. He told investigators after his arrest on Monday that he planned to attack his attack to coincide with Election Day next month. He and a co-conspirator are expected to die as martyrs. According to charging documents, he arrived in the U.S. in 2021, taking steps in recent weeks to advance his attack plans, including ordering AK-47 rifles, liquidating his family's assets, buying one-way tickets for his wife and child to travel home to Afghanistan. The rest comes as the FBI confronts heightened concerns over the possibility of extremist violence on U.S. soil, with Director Christopher Wray telling the Associated Press in August that he was hard-pressed to think of a time in his career where so many different kinds of threats are all elevated at once. So, we've got one person that they found out about, so hopefully that's the end of it. Oh no.
Wow. Okay. So that was just like a rather unfortunate group of just characteristics.
And aligned himself with the ISIS, Islamist State. Yeah. So
wow, that's just like the grand tour of terrorism, isn't it?
Yeah. The bingo card has been filled.
Yep. Anyway, next up, the Department of Justice is calling for sanctions against Google in its landmark antitrust case. So, yeah, we got this happening.
So, partly, this is all related to, like, the Epic game stuff from a couple years ago. And partly why it's worse for Google than Apple's, because Google was hiding evidence. And evidence that they were essentially paying Samsung and others to make their browser the default browser on phones, that kind of stuff, a lot of anti-competitive stuff. So, which makes your case a lot worse when you're trying to prove that you're not a monopoly of any kind. That's when you're trying to get information. Let's see. Yeah, the 32-page filing follows federal judge Amit Mehta's ruling in August that Google had acted illegally to maintain a monopoly on the search engine market. The ruling was the culmination of an antitrust lawsuit the Justice Department filed against Google in 2020, which is joined by 38 state attorneys general. Let's see. Proposals include possibly putting an end to exclusive agreements Google has with companies like Apple and Samsung, prohibiting certain kinds of data tracking. The government wrote that it's considering behavioral and structural remedies that would ensure Google couldn't use its Chrome browser or Android phone in a way that advantages its search engine, but didn't outline what the structural remedies would be. I believe there's also a potential avenue of breaking Google up. I don't know if we're going to go to that route, but yeah, it's definitely a big deal for what they are looking at here as potential remedies. So we'll have to see how that goes, but yeah.
Yeah. So, that's happening. It's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening here because Google has such a stranglehold on its particular field that you have Google, there are like the occasional stragglers like Bing, you know, but it's pretty much all Google, so much so that it's basically become a verb, you know, to Google something.
Yeah.
So it's like, are we going to be like going back to, you know, if Google ends up getting broken up, is it going to be like we're going to end up going back to the days of like when you had like a bunch of different search engines online before Google ended up monopolizing the whole thing?
Maybe.
Because that's going to be fascinating to see.
Yeah. Because there are alternatives out there, just not that big.
Yeah. I mentioned Bing. There's also DuckDuckGo. You know, back in the day, you used to have like Alta Vista, Ask Jeeves, stuff like that. So it's not unprecedented. It's just there's just been generations who grown up under the shadow of Google that the idea that, you know, Google will end up just being one of many is going to be a bit of a shock.
Yeah, and especially if they can't put all of the Google company stuff in there.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Get that AI shit out of there. I don't want summaries from that shit.
Seriously. Anyway. And then we got this other story. So for a little while, Twitter, or X as Elon tries to call it, was essentially suspended within the country of Brazil because of some... the details aren't really important. All you need to know is that Elon tried to be a big boy with his big boy pants and Brazil called his bluff.
Yeah.
And then it turned into like a game of chicken and Elon was the one who finally blinked. So because of that, the suspension of X in Brazil has ended as Elon Musk has complied with all the judge's demands.
Yeah. So yeah, paid off the penalties that were necessary as part of this. Named a legal representative in the country, all that kind of stuff. Blocking certain accounts from the platform. Not much, but he decided to let it go for a month and decided he needed the traffic. That's anywhere between 20 to 40 million people that use it. So.
No.
There you go.
Yeah. So that just kind of died a whimpering death, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we're going now into the entertainment portion of the show, and we're starting off with this weird little story where Al Pacino, famous actor, revealed that he had this near-death experience while he was suffering from COVID, and he saw nothing.
Yeah. There's in the New York Times, the interview podcast, let's see here. What happened was I felt not good, unusually not good. Then I had a fever and I was getting dehydrated and all that. So I got someone to get me a nurse to hydrate me. I was sitting there in my house and I was gone like that. I didn't have a pulse. In a matter of minutes, they were there, the ambulance in front of my house. I had about 6 paramedics in that living room and they were 2 doctors. They had these outfits on that looked like they were from outer space or something. Kind of shocking to open your eyes and see that everybody's around me. And they said, he's back. He's here. When asked if his brush with death led to any metaphysical ripples, he said, I didn't see the white light or anything. There's nothing there. As Hamlet says, to be or not to be, the undiscovered country from whose born no traveler returns. And he says 2 words, no more. It was no more. You're gone. I'd never thought about it in my life, but you know, actors, It sounds good to say I died once. What is it when there's no more?
Yeah.
Kind of heavy stuff out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's making the rounds for his upcoming memoir, so this is the kind of stuff that I guess he would probably have written about and talked about, so.
That and the Shakespeare quote, so.
Yeah. Well, that's how you know he's an old man, when he knows the Shakespeare.
Well, I mean, he's been in a couple of Shakespeare and a couple of Shakespeare adaptations. He was in a really good version of The Merchant of Venice.
Yeah, but I feel like that's an old person thing to have learned Shakespeare in school.
Well, no, I learned Shakespeare when I was in school.
Yeah, but I don't expect younger kids to.
Well, yeah, that's true.
No, they do, like, actually. Yeah. Jacob had it in high school.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still out there. So is cursive. Don't let him, you know,
scare you into thinking, no, this generation's not going to know how to do cursive. They still teach cursive.
They do. He just signed his name, albeit way slower than we would have, in order to get his COVID vaccine. So,
yeah.
Boy, talk about a thing that nobody uses once you're an adult outside of signing checks and shit.
Seriously. Because of, and my penmanship is so bad, I do not have a single signature that looks like the other one. Yeah, that's how bad my penmanship is.
Especially once you realize you don't have to do the cursive like you learned in school. You just scribble like Trump's fucked up shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or it looks like some sort of medical thing.
Yeah, it looks like you're, you know, doing like a lie detector or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, come to think of it, explains why it looks like it's going crazy. But anyway, next up, Velma has finally been canceled at Max after 2 seasons. Apparently, hate watching can only sustain you so far.
But yeah, that's finally done. People can stop complaining about this woke show and whatnot. So there you go. It's dead.
It's over.
They do have one more thing coming. It's not a third season. It's just a Halloween special that came out on October 3rd. So you can check that out as your last dose of Velma.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That has happened. It is now officially dead and buried. Speaking of Max, their Lantern show has officially casted Aaron Pierre as Green Lantern John Stewart. Yeah.
Which seems like a solid choice.
Yeah,
especially they pick somebody with a lighter shade of eyes, so easier to turn him green.
Yep.
So there you go. Kyle Chandler is in going to be taking the role of Hal Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he'll be playing like an older form of that character. So
yeah.
There you go. That's the HBO DC show.
Hmm.
That's going on. They're going to be doing a show. Maybe it'll turn into a movie at some point, but it seems like they're at least doing 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It'll be solid.
Yeah, sounds good. So, yeah, that's happening. And we also got this news that Henry Cavill is set to star in a live-action Voltron movie from Amazon MGM Studios.
Yeah.
Sure. So, that's happening, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his new nerd thing he's doing.
Yep.
Rahsaan Marshall Thurber is directing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He directed Netflix's Red Notice movie that had Gal Gadot, Ryan Reynolds, and Dwayne Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Skyscraper, which was also a Dwayne Johnson movie. So, there you go. Could be good. I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe worse than the old show. That does not hold up anymore.
It really doesn't.
Watch the newer Netflix show. That's a good one.
No, that one's actually great.
Yeah.
The old one is very of it.
It's very slow.
It's very slow. And, you know, it was back in the day when, you know, they took anime, basically just tore out everything and replaced it with whatever schlack they could come up with. So,
yeah.
Even by in Japanese standards, apparently that show was kind of a only a moderate success because it came out like during a time when there was just an inundation of like those super combined robot type shows that were everywhere. So it kind of became more popular over here. But anyway, Will Smith and Michael Bay are both reuniting for a Netflix action movie called Fast and Loose.
Yeah, this is going to be their, I think, their first reunion since Bad Boys, the original Bad Boys.
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah, Fast and Loose follows a man who wakes up in Tijuana with no memories. As he pieces together his past, he learns he's been living two lives. One is a crime kingpin, the other is an undercover CIA agent. So,
yeah. Yep.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then we have this. Netflix is ordering John Mulaney's live weekly talk show for 2025.
Yeah, this is cool. So he did a handful of episodes of a show called Everybody's in LA, where he did a fun little talk show every evening that was live. Did some fun little bits, talked shit about LA, and as well as some of the nice stuff that he has. But yeah, that's going to be having a live weekly talk show next year. That's exciting. Talk shows aren't much of a thing anymore. Like, even the big ones out there, you know, The Tonight Show and that kind of stuff, or they're doing less episodes a week now of The Tonight Show.
Yeah, that's true.
And Daily Show and stuff.
Yeah. People aren't necessarily tuning into TV at 11 o'clock to watch a talk show of celebrities they may or may not care about and hosts that they may or may not care about.
Mm-hmm.
Want to put on Netflix or Hulu or Max or watch something you know you're going to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Fortunately, there's no Conan anymore.
Yeah. So with that, we've also got this really odd little announcement. So Shinobi, it was one of those old sort of IPs from Sega that kind of floats around and does whatever it does. Well, supposedly it's getting a movie adaptation from the director of Extraction.
Yeah, this is part of the weird branching out Sega's doing after Sonic the Hedgehog did well. I think they've got a lot of potential properties floating around out there for movie stuff, and this seems to be one of them, Shinobi.
Mm-hmm.
A property they have not given a shit about in, like, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been, like, 20 years.
They did a Shinobi game.
And it was pretty solid, too. But
yeah,
much like with Ninja Gaiden, what they did with Ninja Gaiden, it's just kind of fallen to the wayside.
Yeah. This could be interesting. Extraction's a very good action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Hargrave, I believe, worked on, I forget if he was one of the guys that worked on John Wick or not, but a lot of good action stuff there, so that'd be a pretty solid fit for Shinobi.
Mm-hmm.
Which Shinobi's whole plot is just, there's Joe Musashi, who is a modern day ninja. He fights evil. That's kind of about it, plot wise.
Yep.
They did not care about licensing in some of those games.
Mm-mm.
They just said, what if we put Spider-Man in here?
Oh, yeah.
Batman.
Yes. Spider-Man, Batman, The Incredible Hulk, Terminator, Rambo. Jason, basically just about anything they could think of.
Yeah.
They've got that. And then, last but not least, we got an official trailer for the Bob Dylan biopic, A Complete Unknown.
Yeah. Which looks pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really a Bob Dylan fan. But I did find it interesting, like, the big thing they're leading into is when he goes electric.
Oh, yeah.
And how pissed off people were for that.
Oh, yeah. They were... Dylan going electric is like one of those very famous, cornerstones in music.
Yeah, because he came up as like a folk singer.
Well, he actually started out like playing in like a rock and roll band, so it wasn't like something he hadn't done before. It's just that by the time he had become famous, he had made his name as like a singer-songwriter type guy.
Yeah.
So when he plugged in at the folk festival, people lost their damn minds.
Yeah, and there's a guy in here who's like, he puts an electric guitar, I'm gonna fucking kill him or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, sure, okay, that's a reasonable thing to say, but okay.
Yeah. And what's especially, it's especially funny too, because, you notice he has a backing band then. And what's funny is that band would end up going on to becoming also like one of those really acclaimed like rock bands in the 60s and 70s, where they were just known as the band.
Yeah.
Yeah. The night they drove all Dixie down, that was them.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of other good songs too, but that seems to be the one anybody remembers.
Yeah. I do say here, the movie culminates in its groundbreaking electric rock and roll performance at the Newport Folk Festival in 1965. So,
yeah,
you get to watch this this whole thing about a weird little Minnesota kid who's playing music and sings in a very specific style, getting big, and then trying to play at a folk festival with an electric guitar, and
people losing their damn minds. Yeah,
yeah.
Personally, I always preferred Leonard Cohen, but that's just me.
Yeah, and then they have at the end of this, Johnny Cash shows up.
Yep.
Give him encouragement, so, you know.
Because it can't be a music biopic without having at least one other, like, major music star making a cameo, you know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, here's Tony Stark showing up in this.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. That we do. We have got ourselves a show. We have ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just, wait a minute. Go out, get a bite to eat, come back. We'll be there, probably. It's like six to one. Once we find a new podcast aggregator, we will immediately sign up for it. We're very desperate like that. But yeah, so I would go ahead and wind it all down here. Thank you once again, Chris, and especially Teresa, for showing up to this little bit of lunacy that I do every week. To all of our listeners, both new and veteran, we ask, if you like what you hear or want to help the show out, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your coworkers, your mortal enemies, or anyone in between, because they may hate you, but they may turn out to like us. And you know what? We're not in the splash zone, so why should we care? So we're going to go ahead and wind that down here. Join us next week when we hopefully, now that we're literally only about a little over 3 weeks until the election.
It's going to get crazy.
Yeah. Stay tuned for the crazy. Good night, everybody.